Okay, I think we're ready, Esther. Good morning. It's January 30th, 2008. The commission is meeting today in the 12th floor, on the 12th floor of the State Capitol Building in our hearing room. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, and with me today are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Tony Clark and Commissioner Kevin Kramer. Cold morning this morning in Bismarck, but we're not the coldest spot in the state. So any welcoming comments from my fellow commissioners?
Good morning. Welcome. Good
morning. Welcome. I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Going to SW1, I move the commission issue a contract for consultant services to Rady, Thomas, Yon, and Clark in Otter Tail Corporations and Montana Dakota Utility Company's Advanced Determination of Prudence Application, case number PU06-481 and PU06-482.
Second.
As you're aware, the commission is continuing its hearing in the Otter Tail Corporation Advanced Determination of Prudence Application and MDU's Advanced Determination of Prudence Application. And therefore, new issues are presenting to the commission, and that's the reason we're holding a continuation of the hearing. And so staff is issuing this contract for consultant services today in order to be able to provide additional information to the commission.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW2, I move the commission adopt the order granting Shorestone Development's petition to Master Meter Electric Service, case number PU07-752.
Second.
Now, on November 9th of 2007, Shorestone Development filed a petition to Master Meter Electric Service for heating and cooling a new 44-plex apartment building being constructed in Mandan, North Dakota. And Shorestone plans to install a single meter for metering separate combination heating cooling units in each apartment. Shorestone would also install separate meters for each apartment's remaining electric usage. Electric service to the building is provided by MDU. Now, our North Dakota Administrative Code generally prohibits master metering, but provides that the commission may approve a petition for master metering if the owner or builder effectively demonstrates to the satisfaction of the commission that the costs of purchasing and installing separate meters in such a building exceed the long-run benefits of separate metering to the customers in such a building. Shorestone presented information to the commission at an informal hearing and also prior to that to staff. Shorestone's engineering consultant estimates the initial capital cost for installing larger meter sockets and panels to carry the additional electric load for heating and cooling each apartment through 44 separate meters to be approximately $30,000 more than the cost for installing a master meter. And Shorestone contends that the cost of purchasing and installing separate meters includes, that $30,000 includes the loss of ongoing electric cost savings to tenants expected from master metering under MDU's General Electric Space Heating Rate Number 32. So having considered this matter, the commission finds, that's what our order says, that Shorestone has affirmatively demonstrated to the satisfaction of the commission that the ongoing cost of purchasing and installing separate meters exceed the long-run benefits of separate metering, and therefore we would grant that. So everything seems to be in order, and I recommend approval.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. SW3, I move the commission adopt the order on interim rates authorizing interim electric rates in Northern State Power Company's electric rate increase application. As you're aware, under North Dakota Century Code, NSP can apply for interim rates. And what the commission does is we examine the filing of the company to make certain that it is applicable to state law. But that is all that the commission is able to do in this matter regarding interim rates, is find out whether the filing has been done according to law. According to law, NSP interim rates are calculated using the company's 2008 test year using the return on equity lost authorized by the commission in 1993 of 11.5%. The rate base and the expenses included in the interim rate calculation are the same in nature and kind allowed by the commission in NSP's last rate order. And the company properly, this is what staff wrote in a memo. They told us that the company properly applies the interim rate increase of 14.96% across the board to all the non-gas rates of all customer classes, resulting in no change to rate design and an overall increase in revenue collections of 11.5%. Staff looked at this carefully. In the past, sometimes staff has, in other cases, the staff has disputed whether companies have filed according to the law. In this case, staff believed that NSP's interim rate request is in compliance with the rules and laws of the state and recommended that it be approved. Therefore, as a result of this, and you have a sheet in front of you that would share this information with you, the interim rate increase is effective February 5th, 2008. It allows 11.50 increase in annual revenue collections, or $17.2 million. For your information, NSP has requested in their rate case that rates be increased 14% rather than the 11.50, and they have asked for increases of $20 million in compared to the interim rate increase of $17.2 million. What is important to customers is what's on the next on that fact sheet, that residential ratepayer monthly impact using 850 kilowatt hours would be $7.71 for October through May and approximately $8.71 from June through September. Everything seems to be in order. I recommend approval.
I think it's important to highlight the fact that if in the final order rates are deemed to be lower than the interim rates, of course, that there will be a payback with interest, and if they're deemed higher, that there is no, that the customer isn't charged for that difference.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW4, I move the commission award a contract to Northwest Abstract and Title, Inc. for the amount of $500 for title work associated with the Columbus Phase 9 AML project and issue a notice of intent to award and award a contract to the Williams County Abstract Company in the amount of $4,760 for the Williams County Road 9 Phase 3 AML project.
Second.
These are, this is a procedural step that has to be done. We need to award these contracts for these abstract firms. Generally, we only have one company per county that bids. This time, we actually had two companies bid. Because of that, in Williams County, we are issuing a notice of intent to award and awarding the contract at the same time, and that's for that is for processes that just have to be done.
All in favor?
Aye.
SW5. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and assigning application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU0832, FPL Energy, LLC's proposed 200-megawatt wind farm in Barnes County, North Dakota. We're all aware that this letter of intent arrived, and now this is the very first step in the commission process. In this action today, the commission is granting the request of FPL Energy to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing the letter of intent and assigning the application to one day. In their letter that they sent to the commission, they indicated that FPL would like to file their application on or about February 5th of 2008. Also, FPL indicated in their letter of intent that they hope to have the permit issued by May 1st of 2008. The commission will just be taking this a step at a time and determining the proper time frame for this application when it comes in. The we are assessing a filing fee of $100,000, and this money would go into an account that then can be used by the commission to assist us with costs that may arise as a result of this case. And then there is a procedure now in state law that any money of that is not used by the commission in the case is returned to the company. And so we would anticipate that $100,000 will arrive with the application.
I would expect that this will be a busy year for wind farm applications. As you may know, the production tax credit to this point has not been reauthorized by Congress. It ends at the end of this year, which compresses the time frame for developers to put forward these kind of projects if they're going to take advantage of that production tax credit. And unfortunately, in the energy bill, the production tax credit, the majority paired it with a $21 billion tax increase on other parts of the energy industry, and it jeopardized the whole tax provision of the energy bill. It was stripped out, and so it's good that the tax increase was defeated on energy consumers. The problem was it jeopardized the PTC, and now that has not been reauthorized.
And there may still be an opportunity to do that sometime this year in 2008 through Congress, and so we'll just see what happens.
We hope. It's a big gamble, though.
It is a big gamble. I think one of the just kind of rules of thumb that I heard the other day about the production tax credit, the actual impact of not having the production tax credit in place, doing these wind farms, is about 2 cents per kilowatt hour to the ratepayer at the end of the project. So it is a significant economic factor in determining whether there'll be an investment in wind energy.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that ends the items in my agenda. Next, we'll go to Commissioner Kramer.
Thanks. Casey, wanted just the announcement of some of the some cost of gas adjustments. MDU is increasing its propane cost of gas charge by $1.64 per decatherm compared to last month, which will change the cost of gas from $16.64 to $18.29 per decatherm. This will affect a typical customer in February by increasing the cost of propane in the bill by about $21.40 compared to last month and about $96.60 higher than last year, same time last year. MDU is also increasing its cost of gas charge, that is natural gas charge, by $4.7 per decatherm compared to last month, which will change the cost of gas charge from $6.33 to $7.37 per decatherm. For a typical February gas bill, the cost of gas will be about $13.61 higher than last month and about $19.67 higher in February of last year.
Of course, the propane cost is the one that's the big one that causes concern this year, because as we can see, the average customer would have approximately $100 higher than in February 2007. That's a considerable amount of money for families to find this year for propane.
Certainly. Well, propane, is a price follower. It follows the price of oil much closer. Natural gas, which is more of its own commodity, tends to have its own sort of price scheme, if you will, and market. But propane is suffering from the cost of oil. KC2 was just added to the agenda this morning. I move the commission adopt the notice of intent to consider information not presented at a hearing in TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP's application to construct a 30-inch crude petroleum pipeline in Cavalier to Sargent Counties, case number PU06421.
Second.
As I said, this was filed late yesterday, and so it got on the agenda this morning. What this is that we're giving notice that we intend to consider information that we received that was not presented as evidence at any of the hearings, and it's been filed in the proceeding by TransCanada. It is docket number 377. It's a copy of a waiver of the 500-foot avoidance area at a residence signed by Albert Wittenberg. Those have been following the case, and there are a number of them. We'll recall that there were some landowner issues that were testified to and unresolved, and in fact at our meeting work session the other day, we were informed, staff was informed, who then informed us that there was some sort of resolution to the Wittenberg property. You might remember that this property, the pipeline was located about 425 feet from the residence. It was across a county road. It did not cross the property owned by the residence owner. In order to move it further than 425 feet to the west of the residence, it would have had to have gone into a pond. To move it, obviously, on the other side, it'd be not only closer to the residence, but also on the other side of the road. To move it 500 feet beyond the residence on the other side, it would actually be on the residence owner's land, cross several roads. So there were a lot of obstacles to that. The best way for it to have been resolved, it seems to be the waiver signed by the Wittenbergs, and that was filed yesterday. What this notice of intent to consider means, again, is that means that we will that it becomes part of the record. It means that there will be a 10-day opportunity for interveners to respond to it, cross-examine, look at the information. And so today we start another 10-day clock.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio.
Commissioner Clark.
TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07711 granting the request of Specialty Export Productions, Inc., Greenfield, Tennessee, to discontinue business at Hatton, North Dakota.
Second.
Specialty Export sounds familiar. It should. On August 29th, the court issued an order appointing the commission as trustee of Specialty Export Productions, Inc. Trust Fund and also joining the surety as a respondent. Although Specialty Export was declared insolvent, their grain warehouse license at Hatton remained active while the grain inventories were liquidated. This facility is now empty, and Specialty Export Products Productions, Inc. has filed a request to discontinue business at the Hatton, North Dakota facility and agreed to release their grain warehouse license.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07705 granting the request of Technology Crops, Inc., Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to operate a 707,000-bushel grain warehouse at Hatton, North Dakota.
Second.
Facility would be back in business as soon as we
approve
that.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends the items in my brief portfolio today.
This afternoon, the commission will be holding an informal hearing. It has to do with a special contract between Bobcat and MDU. And other announced meetings are in the agenda that was distributed. Are there any questions?
I want to just say a couple of things on just personal items. One is, first of all, I want to, and I think we all would agree, express our pride and our congratulations to Secretary Schaefer today. I talked to him late last night. He called, and I said, how are you? And he said, I'm living on a mountaintop. How do you think I am? And took some time to watch his and former First Lady Nancy's speech to the staff yesterday, that very large 100,000-plus staff that is now under his tutelage. As I told him, I said, if you think you're unprepared for Washington, just imagine how unprepared they are for you, because the word has it that he's already spent more time with the head of facilities than the head of facilities has spent with all the previous secretaries added up, because he just talks to people that way. And so kind of a neat conversation last night. It's one of the better conversations I had last night with people from Washington, as a matter of fact. Secondly, I wanted to just express some appreciation to the many individuals who make up the several agencies who responded so well this weekend and early this week to the gas leak over in Mandan. I think there is no need, clearly, to rehash all of the details. They are well known to lots of people. I think from the time that all of us received that phone call Sunday morning from our gas pipeline safety director, Al Mock, right up until service was completed to all of the homes, we were kept well abreast by MDU officials and felt good about the progress that was being made. We never feel good about an incident or a situation that could have become tragic, but the great thing is that it did not become a tragedy, and that is, I think, as a result of the Lord blessing us with appropriate weather at the time that made it easier for everybody to do their jobs and to stay warm. It was also, I think, the result of one of the things that all of the distribution and transmission operators who are in the gas business have to have an emergency response plan, and those emergency response plans remain on the shelf until they're needed, and it's just good to know when they are needed that they actually can work. And it seems that MDUs worked and worked well. All of the state, local, and other agencies that responded did so with tremendous professionalism and generosity. I also appreciate the folks from from Xcel Energy that joined all the many, many men and women from MDU who did their best to restore order and restore service to the 5,200 homes and businesses that were without over during the course of the week. There's, of course, a lot remains to be seen, I suspect, in the, through all of this, but the good news is that everybody, that, at least that we know of, is safe, and we can be thankful for that.
The commission, because we do have gas pipeline safety jurisdiction, will be reviewing the matters that happened in Mandan sometime this spring or early summer.
That's it.
Shoot. Speaking of the pipeline, do we have any indication that there was a violation of safety rules that led to the pipeline?
We actually have every indication that there was no violation. There was no corrosion on the line. You've read and heard all of the...
Wait till we have a chance to look at the whole record, because the fact is,
Commissioner, there is no record.
But there will be filed with us this spring.
You don't have to comment if you don't want to. I'd be happy to comment. There is, at this point, no indication that there is any violation. Our pipeline safety director was on the scene when they uncovered the pipe. His observations were the same as the ones that we've seen. As you already know, that a reroute of the pipe has been on the schedule and is on the schedule, and there will be a thorough investigation not only by the Public Service Commission but by Montana Dakota Utilities, as is appropriate in a situation like this. This was a 1950s vintage pipe, of course. It was a weld, as you know, that it split, and there's some theories as to why that may have happened, but to this point there is no indication that there's a violation.
I'd like to just comment saying that I think that this is all still too premature to comment on, and that the commission needs to step back and wait until we have all the full information on the record before we make any determination about this. I think there is our gas pipeline safety inspector was on site when the pipe was uncovered and has some information already, but there is still a lot of information that would need to be done in a regular review of this you call it. Okay.
That's the point. That's a bit of the problem, isn't it, Commissioner? There isn't a word to call it. There's no visible signs of corrosion. Nor is there a history of it. I mean, these things are inspected pretty regularly, and so there is no history of any corrosion on the pipe.
Do you know when it was last inspected?
I don't, except that it would certainly have been inspected within the regular requirements of the federal code.
And what are those?
I don't know off the top of my head.
How does the company inspect underground gas
line? Well, there's a number of ways, but there are pigging that you some. Well, in fact, I received an email from you recently about pigging. There are ways to monitor a pipe. In fact, the real expert in the room, everybody should know this, the real expert in the room is the former Deputy Secretary of Fossil Fuels, Mark Maddox. He could probably answer all of these things. He had that jurisdiction at the federal level not long ago under our friend Spence Abraham. But there are ways to monitor those things and do so on a regular basis. And once in a while, there's actually a site review as well. You have to remember, this was dug up not very long ago. The speculation, and it is only speculation at this point, was that one of the reasons there might have been some problem was because of the natural hydraulics that occurred after they did some construction, putting the retaining wall in to that very area. So there's a good chance some people looked at that pipe. But again, now you're getting into the area of speculation.
No, the entire inventory was liquidated, and I do want to compliment our staff as well. I know that's been an ongoing process and a lot of work in taking that inventory. As you know, in an insolvency of a grain elevator, the commission has at its disposal as trustee the bond, in the case of credit sale contracts, the credit sale indemnity contract fund, but also the assets of the elevator. And so there was some grain in there, and those assets were liquidated. As I understand, because this is they deal with some specialized commodities. It was a little bit more work, a little more groundwork for our staff this time to get that done. But those will become assets to the trust fund. And I think, Rick, you were the one who handled that in this case. So if you've got specific questions about the handling of that, you can certainly address them direct.
What's the status of the insolvency now?
We have a report. Has it been approved by the court yet?
I think they're probably in the process. We just received the last money in here this week. So we'll, when Bill gets back, I'm sure they'll do the report and recommendation and get that out next week.
As I recall, it looked like the bond and assets were, at least preliminarily, looked positive towards being able to pay off all the money that was due.
What's the size of the bond?
Size is $200,000.
$200K, and so you believe, at least presently, that the $200,000 plus the assets in the elevator will be enough to pay off creditors?
It would appear to us. I mean, there's always an opportunity for folks who perhaps feel that, you know, they are due money to petition the court, but at least our initial look at it would appear that way.
Do you expect there to be a claim on the indemnity fund?
I don't believe so. I didn't recall seeing that.
There was no credit sale contracts.
No credit sale contracts. Okay. Could you explain what the point is of reviewing Xcel Energy's electric rates if Xcel can just take most of its requested increase right away?
Excuse me?
What is the point if I'm a customer, what is the point going through?
Okay, the commission
they can just start collecting them right away.
The commission has the ability to order a refund of these rates, as Commissioner Kramer pointed out, that are being put in place today. The interim rates the legislature said that the company can come in and ask for interim rates during the time of a rate case. They convinced them that the 6 months that we have is too long a time to wait to make a determination of what correct rates should be. And so that is a given now, that interim rates can go into place if they're requested by the company. That does not mean that the commission does not take a very thorough look at this case and determine what correct rate should be during the time that we have to take to do this case.
Dale, the interim rates are purely a function of law, and so the commission in its action today here is really just carrying out its obligation under the law to enforce it. And I don't think there's any editorial comment on the case itself before us. The commission in determining the interim rates or in passing them through does need to look at a few things. I mean, there are some borders that the legislature put on with regard to how interim rates are carried out, but it's really purely a ministerial function. It's making sure that the spreadsheets add up. But it's the law itself which empowers them to take the interim rates. The look that we'll have, the full case, is the same that we would have had whether you have interim rates or not. And at the end of that, if the commission determines that the interim rates are, in fact, above what Xcel is entitled to, people will get a refund with interest.
Could you explain a bit more of what, I mean, you mentioned like a review before these interim rates are granted.
Yeah.
What's the nature of that review?
The only review that's done is there's certain things in law that it says that they have to, how they're calculated. So we look at the calculation and determine whether it was done correctly using the correct numbers, and that is all the commission does at this time.
Like that the ROE is the same as authorized at the last rate proceeding, that the expenses and rate-based items are the same in nature and kind. And you might remember that the only time I can remember since interim rates went into effect or the interim rate law went into effect, there was a challenge to that very standard of expenses that are similar in nature, and there was a bit of a reversal. We didn't allow those interim rates to go in as they were presented by the utility, as I recall. And
there was also the question about the rate of return in the last authorized rate case. That had, because it had been a settlement, there was some discussion about what was the correct, mm-hmm. So the commission staff looks very carefully at these before it makes its recommendation. In this case, they felt that it was in compliance with the rules and laws of the state.
Dale, the three standards that it sets out that the commission has to look at are, one, the rate of return on common equity has to be the same as the rate of return that was authorized in the previous most recent rate case. Two, the rate base or expense items have to be of the same nature and kind as those allowed in the most recent rate case. And there can be no change in existing rate design. So they can't tinker with residential versus commercial versus industrial.
If a person wanted to know on this interim rate, the calculation at the bottom of the page here is put there for a reason. And that's because we know that there could be small commercial customers, customers who use a different amount of electricity than 850 kilowatt hours a month. What you do is the way you calculate this is you use your total customer bill using current rates, then you take out the fuel costs. That relates then to that equals the non-fuel portion of your bill, and you multiply that times 14.96, and that will tell you how much you're going to pay in addition to what you're presently paying.
I'm not familiar with Xcel Energy's electric bill. Is it obvious to the customer what the non-fuel portion of the bill
yes.
is?
Yes.
So, question, why is it a dollar higher for June?
That's because of the way the rate structure is presently situated for Xcel.
If I understood Tony's explanation correctly, the interim rate structure has to assume, or it has to be the case, that the existing rate case, essentially, the existing rate structure essentially goes forward, except the utility is able to make up what it perceives to be a shortage in its earnings given that rate structure.
That's correct. I mean, you have to assume this. They have to, in putting forward the application, assume the same rate design so that you're not shifting any sort of cross-subsidy issues amongst the customer classes. It's just flowed through as a straight percentage as previously authorized.
What's the status of the review of the rate case itself?
At the present time, we have already set up public input meetings in March. A contract has been issued to a consultant to assist staff with the case. The dates for the hearing, we set those already? Or has that been on? We've saved them, so we're in the process of setting a date for the hearing. So that's how we're moving along with
this. Where have you saved them?
Apparently the commission is still determining exactly what dates we're going to
in Outlook. They're saved in Outlook.
June.
Early June.
First.
Late June.
We need an engineer. They're more specific.
28th or something.
All right. Okay. I've been out of the office for a couple of days. Apparently, last 4 weeks.
Kevin, could you explain the significance of 2 cents per kilowatt hour?
Well, the bottom line is, and that's what it is. The bottom line, the production tax credit.
I guess what I'm getting at. Yeah.
To the customer.
Well, to the year, it doesn't sound like a lot. What's the significance of that?
No, but electricity is charged by the kilowatt hour, and I'm going to guess, and somebody will have to correct me. Jerry probably knows exactly what it is, but we're talking about 7 or 8 cents per kilowatt hour, sort of a normal charge for use electricity. Jerry's at roughly
a retail rate.
I mean, with fuel costs included. What I'm talking about is that when you take the production tax credit out of a wind project, in other words, that you're adding that capital cost back in, the cost of wind to the consumer ends up being about 2 cents more than it would be per kilowatt hour than it would be if you didn't have the production tax credit. It's a significant impact on the profitability of wind.
I guess what I'm getting at is what effect would this make to my bill if I was supplied by
it? It depends on how much wind your company.
Well, you'd be grandfathered in though. I mean, if to the degree that you've got wind right now, you'd be receiving the
right.
PTC.
But let's say he's talking about, for example, if MDU determined that they wanted to build a wind farm, it just depends on how much wind they'd add and how much other generation they had, Dale, as to what impact it would have on your bill.
Do you know roughly how much electricity is being generated by wind in North Dakota right now?
Yes. We know how much is being generated in North Dakota, but I can't tell you specifically how much is being used by North Dakota customers. About 500 megawatts is being generated right now in the state.
Better look at the flags before we say that.
Well, anyway, however,
nameplate capacity.
A large proportion of that is being sent to out-of-state customers.
There's about 500. There's about another 500 megawatts that are in some stage of review with us right now. It's kind of amazing how fast that happens.
You've cited more, probably at least one, and maybe more than one coal-fired plant.
You know, I heard.
I think it's a great.
Yeah, I heard an interesting stat the other day from. It was actually a speech given by someone from FPL Energy, who said that in North Dakota in the last 5 years, we have seen more new wind energy come online than the entire state of California has seen come online in that same period of time. And I think it's a rather remarkable statement when you think about, I mean, the California has kind of been the gold standard as far as aggressive wind development for many, many years, and now
Texas
North Dakota has surpassed
that.
Well,
I think so, because other states, like we know Minnesota has about 1,000 megawatts by the end of this year, about 1,100. Other states, Iowa, Texas, have really been adding a lot of wind in recent years. So,
I don't think it can be just chalked up to that, though. I mean, remember, I'm not talking about percentage increase. I'm talking about an actual megawatts added. North Dakota, geographically much smaller than California, with a much smaller load profile, has added more. I think it's a rather remarkable statement.
Is to what extent is the commission going to be able to handle a, if I could use the term, an onslaught of wind applications?
Well, what we're already exploring ways to handle siting applications that come into the commission. One idea that we're pursuing is that we would need to involve some outside consultants to help us because our staff, as you know, for public utilities is not large, 5 people, all right, and they're very busy with even ongoing things. So we're exploring whether we would be able to hire consultants to assist the staff meet their responsibilities.
One of the bits of flexibility.
More waiting out in the wings.
Excuse me.
Do you suspect that there's more waiting out in the wings?
Yes, we're seeing.
Yeah. One bit of flexibility.
Five things in front of us.
One bit of flexibility, and we've talked about this a little before, that we have with siting applications that we don't have with rate applications yet, but I think we've had preliminary discussions about maybe
we're
going
hopeful,
this way.
Bob.
The way that siting applications work because of a law change that the commission pursued a few years ago was that there's just a simple filing fee with siting applications. That money is available not to the general fund as it used to be, but is available to the commission to hire on consultants so that we can process these. And we did that because we knew that there was going to be a period of high energy development in North Dakota. And so we're looking at being able to do that to alleviate staff pressures, but also hopefully provide a good product to the people of North Dakota in a timely fashion. Now, on the rate case side, what we have is a sort of odd thing called the valuation fund, which bills back our expenses to utility companies when they file a rate increase application, such as what we recently authorized with the XL increase application. Now, the problem with that valuation fund is it's our spending authority is capped on it. It's like $125,000 a biennium, which some bienniums is enough, and some bienniums it's not. You'd have to go to the emergency commission to raise the cap on that if you needed to. It's kind of an odd, clunky mechanism. The way it works in some other states, South Dakota is one of them, is that there's just a filing fee with a rate increase, and then that money is available for the commission to use to process that application. It seems like a more fair way to do it, and then also kind of self-adjust for years when you may have a number of applications and for years where you may not have any.
Well, one of the nice things for the companies...
But we have to get a law change to get that done.
One of the nice things that for the companies and the ratepayers is that is this refund mechanism that I think is valuable. Previously, it was basically a $100,000 tax if you wanted to build something. And the other thing about the flexibility with the way the siting applications are done now is that we do have that flexibility to utilize consultants without building the bureaucracy. You know, we're an agency that the last time there was a real build-out of generation, we had 20 more people on staff than we have today. This provides the opportunity to utilize resources outside of the government while still getting the job done appropriately for the citizens.
To give you an idea of why we're concerned about this, presently we have two letters of intent on transmission lines. Those are in the western part of the state from Basin to serve oil fields. We have three letters of intent on wind farms before the commission. And so, and there are, we've heard of other projects in the wings that may
South
be
Hart.
Coming in.
Pipelines, we have pipeline permit applications.
So, anyway, there's a lot of siting activity that's occurring right now.
But we're not complaining.
No.
What's the, there's Valley City, there's
Empower.
There's Empower.
Power. And then there's a third one.
Ashtabula,
no.
Ashtabula is the Valley City property. Mm-hmm.
The Langdon Wind Energy, but no, but then we have a fourth one then too as well, and that's the one that's by that you're looking at with the Lana about. We already have the letter of in Just Wind.
Just Wind, yeah.
Oh, the Just Wind project in Logan County, and that one was
150
megawatts in their first phase. They've got plans for further phases. And beyond that, there is other stuff out there that we're expecting to hear more from as the development continues.
The hang-up being transmission, of course, in many cases.
Could you, you mentioned Mr. Wittenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Could you spell his name, please?
I could. Being a fan of Martin Luther, you'd think I would know that off the top of my head, but I don't want to take any chances, Dale. I've been to Wittenberg. Albert Wittenberg, Wittenberg.
Albert is A-L-B-E-R-T.
It is, and his wife is Gloria.
What's his actual address?
His actual address.
As opposed to his virtual
address. it is Valley City.
Do you have a general location of which property is that?
Well, we do. I don't have it
here. Who's here that could answer that question? Pat, but he's not here. But Pat can tell you where that is.
But Mr. Wittenberg essentially agreed to allow the company to lay the pipe 425 feet.
That's correct. That's correct.
For certain consideration?
We don't have that.
I don't know.
It's between him and
company.
Are there
the company.
Any other folks who are similarly affected yet?
You know, this is always a difficult question, because there are, we don't want to speak for all the folks that have, you know, that are landowners that have issues with the company, because we can't.
But
in terms of the evidence and the record and the issues that are under our jurisdiction, I believe this is the last landowner issue. But I
this would relate only to homes 500 feet
right.
to the pipeline. That
yes,
is the
that is
only
the, that's the final
issue.
One. Yes.
Is there what I'm asking
that we're talking
is
about
are
here?
Are there any other landowners besides Mr. Wittenberg who have a home within 500?
No.
Who have not
already signed a waiver.
And here's Pat, and he can tell you where Mr. Wittenberg is located.
Pat was no doubt listening.
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd have to dig up the map, too, to show you where he's
located. Thanks for being so helpful, Pat.
All right.
Okay. All right. And if there are no further questions.
I just have a couple. the XL, the pipeline safety issue with MDU. What is the nature of the review that the Public Service Commission is doing?
The commission each year does a review of each company's gas pipeline safety. That happens on an annual basis. And this event will be part of that review.
I'm sure we'll be doing additional work just for the event, though. I mean, beyond its normal review.
I'm wondering what that work entails. You said additional work. What kind of work?
Well, the program starts with, as Commissioner Weefald indicated, making sure that the checks that needed to be done were done. I mean, there are just certain standards that MDU as a pipeline operator has to meet. And so I'm sure any review will begin with making sure that all those obligations were done. Beyond that, I mean, you're going to need to get into the actual physical evidence that's there, and that's going to be a process in which our pipeline investigators and pipeline safety people work with MDU to, and their engineers probably primarily, to figure out exactly what happened. Now, beyond just sort of the physical evidence, I hope that we as a commission, I'm sure we will talk more fully about what was learned from it. Do we need to do anything differently? After the incident happened, what went right?
We don't call it an incident. We can't call it that.
Well,
because that has specific meaning in...
I'm talking in the generic sense.
All right.
In the generic sense, once the incident happened, how was it taken care of? What went right? It seems like a lot did go right in this case, but we'll learn more. And what were lessons that were learned that you could do a little bit differently? So it'll be a comprehensive review, but...
The reason I say that is because there's certain connotations with mm-hmm. a gas pipeline incident versus a gas pipeline accident, mm-hmm. and that's why I've tried to call it an event.
In a case.
Because, all right?
Wouldn't it be an incident?
Well, it's only because incident actually does have some official connotations in the federal code, and so we don't use the word incident just because it creates confusion.
How about concert? Mm-hmm.
There you go. Let's go with concert. Let's call it a concert.
The thing that happened in Mandan.
It was a leak, yeah. The thing that happened in Mandan.
That's why we're being careful, yeah. though. I just.
But it is, yeah, it's.
Because
it's,
of the language.
Yeah, it's
involved with these.
So you're not just being didactic.
It's
no, we're not.
It's like Voldemort. We can't say the word out loud.
Okay. Thank you very much. If you have further questions, you can get back to us.
When
Thank
is
you.
The next Public Service Commission incident?
It's February 13th
not
at this point.
Quite
it's
a
the
while.
Next, it's the next
you.
Scheduled meeting. There could be an incident around the corner.